Hello, friends. This is your friend, Kent C. Dodds, and I'm joined by my friend, Stefan Meyer. Say hi, Stefan.
Hi, all.
I'm pretty sure I said your last name wrong, even though I practiced it. I have a history of doing this on podcasts, and I try. I really do. It's not like I'm negligent. Anyway, Stefan, you and I have known each other. Oh, and I forgot to mention, for this season, I'm asking everybody to say hi and then their name, and we see how many people get that. And you just said, hey, y'all. I asked you to say, hey, Stefan, but that's okay. Stefan and I have known each other for, I don't think it was Testing Playground. I think you were involved in the Testing Library project a little bit in comments and issues and stuff. You may even have contributed to the repo now before Testing Playground was a thing. Do you remember when we...
I don't remember. I do remember, indeed, we first had our talk, I think, about Testing Playground. I remember your tweet, and it was like something, okay, I need this REPL for Testing Library. Can someone build it?
Yeah, that's right. That's how that started.
And then I hacked together in a day or two Testing Playground, the first version. And that is how we came to chat. And eventually Testing Playground was invited into the Testing Library org. So I think that's how things came together.
Yeah, and my goodness, I was blown away. You have this really great ability to build a very useful small project or product, and you have several of these. Before we get like too far into that, where I'm saying introducing you, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to us, and I'll fill in any of the holes that you skip if I want to dig into some of that stuff. So why don't you give us an intro to yourself, Stefan?
Okay. Hi, I'm Stefan. I'm a dad of two boys and husband to my wife. I'm now into IT for, I think, 10 years. And before that, I did something totally different. I worked for an architect. I made cut drawings. I worked on the underground infrastructure with pipes and cables and wow, stuff like that. And from that profession, I just saw the need for really applied applications, collaboration platforms, and stuff like that. So I eventually decided to quit my job and start working in that area. And that software led to some open source projects, and that led to here.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of those open source projects. You've got several of these. Is it fair to call them like relatively small? It's not like you're building a Twitter or a Google Calendar or something. They're pretty relatively small, but they're very useful, each in their own way. Can you tell us about what some of these projects are and where your ideas came for some of these?
Yeah, sure. So my day job is a collaboration platform between companies. It's a really business-to-business application, and that's dedicated into the projects in the living environment. So the road constructions, big buildings, and all managing stuff there around it. And I got that idea at my previous employer. We really just saw the need for one collaboration platform around a Dutch law. I decided, okay, if there is a need, let's build it. And that went the same as Testing Playground. I really, just in a week or so, I hacked together a platform and I offered to the customers and I said, okay, we can use this to solve your problems. And they were happy with it. And so we used it and it starts growing and growing and growing. And now we are almost 10 years further and they still use it. The platform has evolved and it's really big now. That's my day job. And indeed, things like Testing Playground, I just see the need in this case from your tweet. And I think, okay, that's a nice evening project. And then hack away 2 evenings or 2 days and we have something that works. And sometimes that leads to nothing and I just throw it away again. And other times someone on Twitter says, oh, this is awesome. And we have an online product. And the same for Updrafts. It's a Tailwind studio. I just saw a need. I played a lot with Tailwind and I think, okay, it's awesome if this designing will be have a faster response. All the time updating these class names and not seeing what you're doing. So I just played with React DND and thought, okay, can we make some drag and drop interface like Figma, but for Tailwind? Just some proof of concept kind of thing. And yeah, it worked. So I thought, okay, awesome. Let's share on Twitter just some preview video. And people really found it awesome. So I think, okay, let's publish it to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's how my projects go. Just playing a few evenings and then something happens or not.
Yeah. On Updrafts, that one's a paid product, right?
Yeah, correct. It does have a really generous free version. So I do see most of the users just stay in the free. No one wants to pay. but yeah, yes, it's a paid product.
That's awesome. Yeah. So it's what I find interesting is in like the way that you talk about these is, first of all, you're able to get these things done really quickly. And you have a blog post where you kind of talk about that. And I'd love to dive into that. But another thing that you seem to do is, and you mentioned this when you were talking about testing library or testing playground, is after an evening or two, you had something that worked. But the version that people interact with at testing-playground.com right now is not the version that worked when, you know, after the first two days of working on it. And there's a lot of going on there. So can you talk a little bit about like, how do you decide when a project like that is done? Like what is an MVP? And what, how do you decide what features are you like, I don't need to work on that right now. We'll wait until later to see if it's going to be a thing or whatever.
Yeah, so for testing playground, the MVP was really first how to make testing library work in the browser, because it's a command line thing. I usually see it reported in my terminal, not in my browser. So I was like, okay, how do I hook this up in the browser, and can I make an interface that I select one element and it shows me the matching query. Once I got that, I think, yeah, that was pretty much the MVP. And then, of course, need to polish up the interface a little bit. And yet, the polishing up is usually what takes the most time. So just, yeah, in case of testing playground, make it ugly as long as it works and show it to people. And if they like it, then you can polish it up and spend the time there. Hmm. For things like Updrafts, it's, of course, bigger than testing playground. It has a lot more side dependencies. You need to have the landing page, you need to have the login system. You must save stuff to the database. The first testing playground version could not save stuff to the database.
Mm-hmm.
It was only later that we made things stored in the URL. And after that, we decided, okay, it would also be awesome if we made short URLs and save things in GitHub gists.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go look to Updrafts, the first MVP, we could drag and drop stuff together. That part worked with the styling with Tailwind classes, but things like an authentication system around it or saving your projects to the database, that's all not required for MVP.
Hmm.
So what I do in that first 2 days that I convince myself, okay, this is working, is really focus on that business perspective, like, okay, what do I need? I need that drag and drop interface for Tailwind. I don't need the authentication system because I know I can build it.
Yeah.
I don't need to store it to the database because I know that's possible. So really focus on the client side and the drag and drop behavior and starting with Tailwind, and that's it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So when you're building something new, you don't work on the stuff that you know will work at first, because then you're just spinning your wheels on stuff that are solved problems. You focus on what's the part of this that is an unsolved problem that I don't already know how to do. Make sure that can work, because alternatively you could work on all of the authentication stuff, which you already know how to do, and all the back end saving, and then you get to the part where it's drag and drop Tailwind. For some reason that doesn't work, and so you've wasted all of this time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that's great. And that probably plays into your productivity a little bit, because you don't find yourself spinning your wheels on stuff that you already know how to do, but you focus on the right thing to work on. And you have this blog post that I just loved called My Career and Lessons Learned in a Nutshell. It's actually not that long, but it is packed with just really useful tips. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about maybe why you wrote the blog post and some of the key takeaways there.
Why I wrote it. I'm not really like I have tens of thousands of followers on the internet, but I am more visible last year in the middle of the COVID crisis than I was before. And that was just because COVID, yeah, it sucks, but it created a lot of time for me, especially in the beginning of the year. I wrote about that before. In the beginning of the year, 2020, I was really motivated. I had a lot of time, so I launched the one project after the other, testing Playground, Updrafts. I did a big refactoring on some open source libraries, such as Leaflet GeoSearch. And because all that activity, I got questions on Twitter, but also on Discord, like, okay, how it's possible that you can create so much stuff? I'm busy at home, I have my job, I have my family. I feel like I don't have a free hour at hand. So how are you doing that? And most of those questions came from junior developers, from which I just know from experience, they are able to do awesome things, but because they don't have the experience, they are a lot slower. They need more time for stuff. So if they see, I don't know, something as a testing Playground, they see the whole big product and they think, oh, this will take me weeks to build. Well, partially because my experience and because of the experience, also because of the approach, I'm able to build something like that, the first MVP in 2 days. And I think, yeah, that led me to write this blog, hoping that I will make them realize that it's not because they are slow. It's just because I have 10 more years of experience.
Yeah, and you know, I really like that thought process. Or like that sounds like the main motivator for you was like, hey, I just want to make sure it's clear for everybody that just because this would take you forever to a long time to build doesn't mean that you're not cut out for this industry or anything. I've been doing this for 10 years. And I like that because I think that sometimes like starting in any industry is really difficult. And the last thing that you need somebody else telling you is that you're not cut out for that industry because you're already thinking that to yourself. You actually, you mentioned that you didn't even start in tech. Is there and that you started in like architecture and then you found your way into tech? Is can you talk a little bit about like your journey getting into industry in general and kind of why you didn't start in tech and why you made the transition?
Why I didn't start in tech, it was because a long time ago, really 15 years I think around that, it was a time that you end with school, you must go to college, so you must really think about, okay, what do I want to do the rest of my life? And I did have programming already back then as hobby. And of course, there are a lot of people around you. So until today, I'm not sure if I really decided, like, okay, I want to keep programming as hobby and I want to do something else for my day job so that you can have your really hobby. Or that I was just influenced a lot by others, because back then, yeah, being a developer meant really this nerdy type of person. Only nerds work in development. You really want to be that. I was a really influential person or easily influenced by others. So maybe that played part. But for a long time, I kept telling myself, okay, I did not go directly to IT because I wanted to keep IT as hobby. And I wanted to be an architect. So I started in architecture.
I want to like drive in a little bit more on the influence that others had on you. I definitely, when I was a teenager, there were plenty of things that I was really into, but I didn't want people to know I was into it because I was worried what other people would think of me. And I'm certain that it had a negative impact on how well I excelled in those different areas. You mentioned that you felt like people's perception of programming was very like only the nerds do that. And do you think that had a pretty significant impact on how well you excelled in programming early on?
Yeah, I think so, because I was already this insecure type of person. So I did get good grades at school. So they already said like, yeah, you're the nerd of the class.
Mm.
So then make me the bigger nerd by going to an IT direction. I definitely think, yeah, that it played part in my decision to not study IT.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes it, when you think about stuff like that, or when I envision people's lives being totally changed by the influence of other people, where like they don't get to their full potential, or, you know, sometimes you'll see movies where people are just total jerks to the little kid or something. And I just hate that so much, mm-hmm. because, those impacts, especially when it's like kids being mean to other kids too, because the mean kids don't even know how negative an impact they're having on the entire life of that individual that they're teasing or whatever. Yeah, I guess it'd be even worse if it were adults, and that sometimes that is the case. Well, actually, there are two sides to this. First, I'll set that up. So there's the side of I'm the one being picked on, or I'm the one being given some advice that is influencing my decisions. And then there's the other side where I'm the one giving advice and I could be influencing other people's decisions. And I'd like to kind of explore both sides of this. So on the side of like the one being influenced, how can somebody be self-aware enough to know that they are being influenced and to be able to like have the strength to avoid being unfairly influenced, I guess, or like just make sure that they are making their own choices? Do you have any strategies for like shielding yourself from the influence of others?
I think that's really, really hard. But yeah, I think it's good to, if you get advice from someone, if you ask it or not, really ask yourself if that's the best thing for you to do and if that's really what makes you happy.
Hmm.
Even a while ago, I think that was 2 or 3 years ago, someone came up to me with a business idea. And they were so enthusiastic about it that I really, yeah, they dragged me with it. So I also became enthusiastic. And later on, I thought, okay, but that's not what I want.
Hmm.
It's a great idea. I really think you should do it, but it's not for me. So yeah, I stepped back and I stopped doing that. So I think I should also have realized that sooner. They were so enthusiastic and that's good, but I can join them for their enthusiasm. I don't need to be part of their decision or their path in life.
Oh, that's a great example. I'm definitely the enthusiastic one. my whole life, I've always been enthusiastic about stuff that I, for some reason, couldn't understand why everybody wasn't as excited about this as I am. You know, mm-hmm. That's just the way that I live my life, I guess. And I've learned to just be okay with people not being as excited about things as I am, but I won't go too deep into that. But I think that's a great strategy to when there's a new opportunity a change, like you're going to make a change in what you're doing. If it's just like somebody's asking you for help moving or something, like that's one thing. But what we're talking about, like big like lifetime impacts, impactful decisions, taking a step back and thinking about is this the direction that I want my life to go? What direction will my life go if I go with whatever they're suggesting?
Yeah. And if it will make you the better, happier person.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'm having a conversation with a friend just like over email. So it's async. It's going on right now. And she is just telling me, I'm not sure whether what I'm doing right now is what I want to continue doing in the future. Like if this is I'm happy I came into this and I'm happy with what I've been doing, but I'm not sure that this is what I want to continue doing for the foreseeable future. And I think that's very self-aware. And I think that it's good to reevaluate. And one thing that I've done is write down my mission statement. And I just kind of reevaluate that mission statement every few years and see if, and if I'm still happy with the mission statement, make sure that my actions are in correlation with that mission statement. You make changes and adjustments as you go.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes that's really, really scary. It's also in my last job. I worked there for 5 years, and then you have this contract and you really know, okay, I'm solid here. I just get that paycheck at the end of the month. I don't have to worry about my job or my bills or anything. But after 5 years, it became so boring for me. I was really done there. And then the decision to, okay, I go quit my job. I go do something else. It's frequently scary, but when I did it, it was so fulfilling. It was really like, okay, I should have done this a year ago. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's great. So self-awareness, really good for shielding yourself from the influence of others. But it's not always bad to be influenced by others. Like we ask the experienced questions because and for advice because they have experience. So if you're on the other end of this and somebody's asking you questions, how do you make sure that you frame your response in a way that doesn't misguide or misdirect them so that they make a decision that's not going to work with their life goals?
Yeah, if you know, it depends a little bit if you know someone really good or if it's someone you don't know, of course. But if you're not sure, then I think you must be just explicit about explaining that it's like how I should do it. That doesn't mean it's also the best decision for you, but this is how I would approach it. Yeah, and ask them what they think about it. Not bring feelings or uncertain stuff as facts when it's not fact.
Yeah, that's actually a really good good thought. Like the first question before you before anything else is just like, how well do I know this person? and that will, yeah, that should frame the way that you respond. And I like the idea of kind of framing it in a way of like, this is what I would do. Even with people that I know well, I think that would be a good way to frame things as well, is just to say, hey, I know you and I feel like you would do well in this way, but this is just kind of what I would do if I were in your position, given what I know about you. But like, it doesn't matter how well you know somebody. At some point, you don't know everything about them, and they need to make their own decision. And so, yeah, I guess we just need to really be thoughtful about the influence that we have on other people, especially when they really respect us. Maybe we don't know them very well, but they feel like they know us very well. Or even if they don't know us very well, they respect our opinion. And maybe even just tell them, hey, just make sure that you check this with what you really want to do, and give them that advice. That would probably be really good advice to give.
Yeah, definitely. I think we can already recognize it also in the programming, because I'm sure we all had a situation that we read a blog from someone that we really look up to, and they recommend like, okay, do it this way. We all directly start refactoring our code and think, okay, that's the best way to go. And 1 or 2 years later, we think, why did I do that? I now have more experience and I see they did not approach it the right way. I want to have it differently. Exactly the same stuff. You also have with life-changing decisions.
Absolutely. And you know, even with a blog post like that, it's very easy, especially for somebody with limited experience, to see that and not catch the nuance. And so they'll apply it in a different way than was intended by the blog post. So maybe it was a good idea, but even though, despite that, it was misapplied or misunderstood or something. And so that like you have to, as a advice giver, you have to be aware that of the additional context and the nuance that people may not be picking up and try to counteract that. Do you have strategies for that? Like when, if you're writing a technical blog post, I mean, I'm asking for a friend, like some ideas on like how to make sure that people notice some of the nuance and apply things without, without missing some of that nuance.
That's the hard thing about technical blogs. But in my blogs, you really often notice that in my final word that I explicitly mention at the bottom, I really often notice like, okay, there are multiple ways to do this. I've handled them all in my article. None of this is the best. Choose whatever you want, whatever works for you or your team. And I sometimes also literally say programming isn't black and white. There are different things to do stuff, and they all have their own reason and functionality. I think it's just be explicit.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you said that. It made me think. So programming isn't just about a one or a zero. there's numbers in between. It's more like quantum computing.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are various combinations really in technology, there's not, and this applies to life just as well, that it's every single person's situation is a very unique combination of different variables. And I mean, maybe in programming, like this is where we get commoditized solutions for different, problems. Eventually we solve this problem, we move on to the next, but I don't think that we have something like that for life because our lives are too varied. We have just such a wide variety of decisions. And okay, so maybe we've solved like the breathing problem. Everybody needs to breathe, like those very low level. But well, like once you're making life changing decisions or life directing decisions, that's where it's just too high of a level of abstraction to come up with a solution that's like, oh, everybody should do this. Because everybody's life experience is different and their goals are different, their desires are. And so advice should be kind of couched in that, so based on my goals, here's what I would do, based on how well I know you and what your goals are. And sometimes actually when I give advice, I'll say, I believe that this is what you want and here's how I would get that. That can be useful too. But ultimately it comes down to as an individual, take a step back from all the advice that you've received and think, okay, so what direction do I think this is going to take my life? And am I happy with that direction?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we just have a minute or two left. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to?
No, I think we said it all right in the time.
Great. Cool. Well, we do have homework for folks, and we'd like for you to be a little introspective. So take a moment, we want you to take 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes for both sides of this. So 10 minutes to think about how advice that you've given to somebody recently may have influenced another person's life and some other, like the direction that they're going in their lives. So maybe somebody in a Discord chat or on Twitter asked you like whether they should take a job or something. That's a question that comes up a lot. It's in our Discord, in the KCD Discord, and it's very easy to give people life directing advice. And they're asking, and it's okay for them to be asking. But think about how the advice that you gave them might influence them, and how you might do that. In a way that helps them take ownership, I guess. That's the first part. And then on the flip side, how the advice that other people have given you have influenced your own direction, and consider whether you're happy with that direction. Does that, you have anything to add to that, Stefan?
I could not have said it better.
Okay, great.
Yeah, for everyone, just believe in yourself and don't make decisions that you not fully support.
Absolutely. Great. This was an awesome conversation. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, what is the best place for people to connect with you and keep up with what you're doing with all the cool... Oh, actually, before we do that, one project I don't think you mentioned, I may have misheard it or something, but you didn't mention red.rake. You want to give a quick pitch on that? That's another paid one that I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the other way around. It's a rake.red.
There,
yeah, it's a backend for form handling. That way, when you host your website on Netlify or on Vercel and you have your static pages, you can just connect your form to my endpoint at rake.red, and I will take care of every form data that you submit to it.
It's cool. Yeah, I think it was a great idea. Another one of those relatively small things that are just really useful. So very cool. Okay, so yeah. Thanks. Now, what's the best way for people to keep up with what you're working on is find out the next cool thing you build?
Just follow me on Twitter. That's Meyer_S. And I'm sure you'll post it somewhere in the description here.
Yep. Okay, awesome. Hey, thanks again. And we'll see everybody later. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.